Hello, welcome back to Seeking Scale. Andy, how's it going?
Yeah, not too bad. It's funny. I'm glad you're back up in the Northeast because now we can kind of commiserate about the brutal cold. I mean, today it's better, but yesterday, yeah, up in Maine, in Portland, which is like southern Maine, we had a high of 7. So not ideal, but you know, could be worse. So how have you guys been adjusting to the climate?
Yeah, it's not so different than where we were in France. Like the climate there was probably more like Denver or something. So like pretty dry and definitely like four seasons and snow and stuff like that. It's probably just a little colder here, but we definitely got snow. Last Friday was a snow day for the kids, which is cool. So we discovered we're 2 blocks from the local sledding park.
Oh, nice.
really cool open, you know, huge field where everyone in town goes sledding and we can just walk there, which is awesome. Didn't know that. Yeah. So it's going great, man. Like kids are making friends in school and like they don't have any homework, which is awesome. So yeah, all good on the home front. Yeah.
Nice. How about on the Castos front?
It's a disaster, man. No, it's good, man. Like we rolled out OKRs on Monday and, you know, I think that the term I would say is like, it's real now, you know, like the OKRs are front and center. We're talking about them all the time. People know what they're responsible for and what we're expecting. And it's really cool. I mean, it's being rolled out and adopted in a really constructive way. I want to say positive, but like constructive, which is nice. Like that's the whole purpose. It's not meant to be like a grading system for people's worth, but like it's meant to inspire and motivate us all and us be able to just track that, you know, like, hey, we're going to do this thing. Do you agree? Yes. Cool. Let's go do this thing. And then in 85 days, we'll say we did or we didn't do this thing. And like, that's how I'm framing it. And people are responding really well to it. There's a couple of challenges, I think, to it. They like individuals sometimes respond to that differently and not bad, just differently. And some job functions don't lend themselves to these kind of hard metric goals as well as others. And I think that's just an intrinsic challenge with this kind of thing. But that's been a lot of what I've been focused on in the last week or so. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah. I mean, you said OKRs for your team, they're real now. I think on our end, EOS is definitely not in the real category yet. We've looked at it where we did quarterly planning, worked in prioritization. And I think we set our rocks, which in EOS, it's just like the big goals, but haven't quite gotten to a place where it's like everyone has a rock and 3 to 7 rocks. And then we talk about it at every single meeting kind of a thing. And I really am just trying to like ease into it bit by bit. So I'm happy with the progress we've already made of just really getting the foundation in place. And for the most part, just using it to point the team in the right direction, but figuring out what works, what doesn't with Matt and Ben, or I guess we'd call like the leadership team. And a lot of it this quarter for me is just going to be laying that groundwork of actually like digging into Notion to make sure, not to make sure because we're not doing it, but it's like to get it set up to a spot where we're actually using it in the way that's consistent with how we want to implement EOS and everything else. And so this quarter is going to be, yeah, laying a lot of groundwork, but I'm excited for it. It's been good. But outside of that, probably at the time, it felt a lot worse than it actually ended up being. But we did have a partial outage last Friday, and it was at like the worst time possible where it was right about the time when the games are starting. So everyone's going in to build their lineups, and there were some issues there. And what it came down to was database CPU got overloaded. And so it never was completely down, but there was just like intermittent issues with some requests failing because of that. And the nice thing, if there is such a nice thing, is that the team responded incredibly well. Matt and Ben immediately dove in to like identify the cause of the issue, figure out how to improve it, what to do there. Support team got into Slack, into our partners' Discords and everywhere, just like sound the alarm bell, but also reassure people and let them know we're working on it. And the benefit is that it just wasn't as widespread as we had feared. Like things were still going through. It just, people might have had to try a couple times, but it just was stressful. And honestly, I think it highlighted some improvements we need to make to the infrastructure. But I was just really proud of how the team responded. And it showed in the way the our subscribers and customers reacted is that there wasn't a ton of negativity. We helped everyone through it. And if they weren't able to build their lineups, we had already made some documentation on what to do to have DraftKings or FanDuel withdraw your entry so you don't lose any money, that sort of thing. And yeah, there weren't any, I don't think we had to even issue any refunds or anything like that because we were able to sort it all out. So that was good. The response was great. Like I said, it highlighted some work we need to do. And so one of our goals for the year is just get the company running like a well-oiled machine. It's intentionally subjective, but it's just very objectively right now, it is not running that way. And we had primarily been focused on when we had done like our quarterly planning and figured out, okay, like what can we do to work towards that bigger goal? A lot of it was focused on the things that I kind of have two categories where I say like things that help our sanity. And then they fell into that category where it's like, these are time wasters. These are things that cause developers to have to go down the rabbit hole of just troubleshooting what's going on, just wasting people's time, whether it's support, engineer, whoever. That was really what we were trying to tackle. But with this, I realized there's more in the other bucket that I'm calling stability that we need to tackle of just the things that can break. And like, you can't have a well-oiled machine and have the machine just not run. That's not good. So we reprioritize a bit, and Matt and Ben are able to tackle some really impactful things that aren't going to take as much time as we had thought. And I am feeling the benefit of just being more deliberate about prioritization and all that, because these are the kind of things that we've had on our list for a while of, okay, how can we improve, how can we lower the impact of spikes in users or just any user in general on the database and things like that. And we just always looked at it as such a big project to solve it. But when we try to be more deliberate about prioritization, we say, okay, like this is way too big of a thing to scope. What are the pieces of it? What are the pieces that actually matter? Like what's going to have the biggest impact? And then we found a few things that what we would have thought to like solve the problem entirely of not having no impact on the database, but like fixing all the things that increase the load, that would be months and months of work. But we found a few things that with a couple weeks of work will get us 90% of the way there so that we just don't have major concerns. And so that it was like high moments of stress when it was going on, relief to see how well the team responded, but still like stress of shit, like how do we make sure this doesn't happen again? And then when we dug into it, did some more planning, it was like, okay, I feel like we've got a plan to get out of this and it's not going to derail us too much and it's going to be really good investment. So long ramble, long story, but it's at the end of it, like I feel better about the direction we're going, about what we're working on and just like how we're planning it all out.
You know, I'm kind of laughing and giggling over here. Like, I wonder how much of the things that we have in common is because we talk so often about the businesses and like cross-pollinate ideas and stuff. We're doing a similar thing, and it's not from kind of talking to you, but another kind of friend founder had like a major like database corruption issue a couple weeks ago. And they were telling me about it in Slack and like really bad, you know, like data lost and stuff like that. And so we started a similar initiative. And so I have some questions about how you're doing things and we can maybe share some best practices maybe. But like we started a Notion doc of like things that we should worry about, you know, like the known possibilities and there are unknown possibilities and you just don't know what those are. But like, you know, what are known weaknesses, you know, like single points of failure and things like that. And for me, more importantly, we should have communication internally and externally plans for how this is handled. Because like what I worry about is if it's that week I was off and folks try to get in touch with me, but I'm at the beach or playing golf or whatever, and they can't get in touch with me for like 4 hours and we have one of these, like I'm the one who makes the decisions about how this is communicated externally. And so like we all, you know, people listening should have a plan in writing so that anyone can follow it. It's not just if you're around and it's between 8 and 5 that, you know, this plan is followed. And so, yeah, we're kind of just identifying all the potential things that we feel like we need to have a process for and improve the technical kind of aspects of things like you're talking about, but more like, how do we communicate internally? How do we communicate and when do we communicate with customers? Yeah, don't have action on many of these yet, but just starting to like figure out what that world looks like and just start chipping away at it.
Yeah, for us, the last time we had an issue, it was more of an outage. It fortunately just happened at a time where it didn't have no impact, but it just wasn't that serious. It was still a few hours away from when games were starting, but it shook us up because we're like, if this happened at a different time, it would have been really bad. And so that got me down the rabbit hole, as I'm sure if any developers are listening, are probably like cringing, but it's just like, I'm like, okay, like how do we set up multi-cloud support? Like, what does that look like? So that if a Google service, because we're on Google Cloud Platform, like if they have an issue, we can fail over to AWS. And they're just like, yeah, that's like nothing we can do. It's companies 100 times our size don't have that. And even if they do, it's like, that is just like not. So it wasn't as all saying like, let's absolutely do this. But I'm just like, okay, like let's at least explore it. And then realize, yeah, that's not an option.
But even like backing up in different data centers, you know, like one of the big like hosting providers in France, like the building burned down last year, you know?
Yeah. People like, forget that this like at the end of the day, it all comes down to physical atoms. Like there's things stored somewhere. And yeah, what that made me realize though, because I'm just like, if we go down and people cannot build their lineups and they lose money because of us, that's a really shitty position to be in all around. And we'd want to give refunds, but like if we refund every single customer, if we just refund a month of revenue, like that's not ideal either. And so what I realized is, okay, like realize quickly, like, yeah, we can't prevent this from ever happening. There's things we want to do to minimize the chance of it. But what we need to do is say, if this looks like it is happening, how can we respond in a way that makes it so we don't need, like people, our customers aren't losing money. And so that was where we said, okay, like if this happens, here's the order of events that we go through of sending out an email, contacting everyone in Slack, posting something in the app if we can. And at what point do we tell people to withdraw their entries and give them a link on how to do that? And we have like videos on it. We have templates they can send to DraftKings or FanDuel. And that was like a really big relief because it's like, okay, like in a worst case scenario, we can make sure our customers are covered. And that's ultimately what we care about. What I realized last week is that it's still just like not that clear to follow of a process, because what is an outage? Like, when do I start this? And so Ruben, who's our newest support person, he was actually the one like first alerted everyone to potential issues. But the problem was that like it wasn't a full outage. So some people aren't having problems at all. When Matt would go in to try to see if he could replicate it on his, like if he could get builds through, it worked. And so it's like, at what point do we have, do we say like, this is all hands on deck emergency versus not? And that's where it gets really hard for, I think, on the support side of making that call. And so what I've talked to Matt and Ben about is, in some of the work that we're doing, is just getting very clear on, or as clear as we can, on how someone can make that call and like when to do it and what to do in those situations. And it's never going to be a perfect flow chart of if this happens, then do this, then do that. But I think we can give better guidelines there and just make it clear to our team that we always want you to, if you take a conservative action in the sense of like protecting our customers, where I would much rather that things weren't actually completely broken, but you acted as though they were, than the other way around. And because that is, again, the challenge that we face, is that there is very time-sensitive stuff for our customers. It is a B2C business, but there's real money on the line. And there is a time where when these games happen, when these games start, you can't change anything. And so that's where we're at, where, again, we have a process. It helped, but it definitely wasn't executed the way I thought it would be, because it just wasn't clear, does this count as a situation that should start things off? So I feel like it's always a moving target, but just getting something in place is a big step in the right direction.
What do you guys do for like uptime monitoring and letting you know about that stuff? Like text alerts into Slack. Like, what does that look like?
So that's honestly something that's part of the work that we're doing now, is just getting better about it, because uptime, like, it's just not as, and I'm not going to pretend that any SaaS is simple, but I think there's just so many layers of what people are doing that a simple uptime thing, like, can you access our app? Yes, is one check, but then can you actually build lineups with it? Are projections loading? There's just a lot of different things to check for that we want to do more to track. And right now we have like the basics. And what we're really working on is better, I guess, proactive alerts of, hey, CPU usage is spiking. Let's look into this. The other thing that's like a problem is that when, I'm assuming it's the same regardless of the cloud provider, but like when you scale up or down a database server, it's not seamless. It's not instant. There's roughly 5 minutes of downtime. It could be more, it could be less. It just all depends. And so this is where, again, because of the time sensitive nature of what we're doing, it's a huge issue, because like if 10 minutes before the contests lock, we realize there's an issue, we really can't upgrade the database then, unless it's literally no one can do anything already. Okay, let's do it then. But if some people are able to build, when we upgrade the database, no one can. And so there's just the challenges around that. And so we're just trying to figure out the best way to handle it. But a lot of that are just the things we put into place now. And that's, again, where like, as someone non-technical, I tend to look at it in too simplistic a view. And then the developers are like, well, like, sure, if we hit 90% CPU usage, we should know. If we hit 70%, we should know. But how long do we hit it for? If we hit it for a second, 10 seconds, like when, at what point? Like, it's just not that simple. And so it's just trying to find that happy medium of not overthinking it. But we've gotten to the place too where, well, frankly, often just have, we used to have just way too many alerts, and then you don't pay attention to any of them. And so it's finding that happy medium of the alerts actually provide value and you follow them is just not as easy as I would have assumed it was, but it makes sense as we kind of dig into things.
Yeah. I mean, I think the way we think about this on a kind of big picture level is like, all we're trying to do is add value to the company, right? Like, that's what I try to do every day, to show up and add value to the company. And that's through things like making it a well-oiled machine, like you're talking about, and having processes and procedures so that the company not just runs, but grows without us, you know? And I think it's stuff like this to have, say, the maturity to realize that like the most important thing isn't always new features, but just safeguarding the company becomes important at some point. Because like, and this is what I told the team on Monday, is like, right now, the worst thing that could happen for us is not that we don't ship this feature this week, but that we lose a week's worth of customers' data. You know, like that would be an enormously bad thing. And like the chance that like AWS or S3, like West region, just blows up is really low. But it's also probably worth a couple weeks of work and call it $1,000 a month, maybe, to back our shit up in another physical region, because then I won't worry about it. And there's something to be said for that too, you know?
Yeah. No, and I think that's definitely where we're at. And I was seeing it through the same lenses. And that was, honestly, I was kind of a dick at some of the discussions with developers, with like Ben and Matt, where in the heat of the moment, it's just like, guys, like we got to figure this out. And I know there's no 100% solution. But what I think people, and I can even stereotype a bit here, what I think developers will often not calculate correctly are downside risks. When we are trying to find ways to minimize the impact of outages or just minimize the likelihood of outages and that, it's like often, yes, I personally will always like start at the farthest way of like, how do we just like have full redundancy? Okay, that's not possible. Let's work down to find something that is. But what I think the calculation has to factor in, what is the cost if this breaks? Like, how big of an impact is that to the company? And like, for you guys, if you lose a significant amount of data, that's huge. When it's definitely not a commodity business, but there are a lot of competitors, and it's not that hard to migrate from one host to another. And like, that's a real risk. I feel like you don't have as much risk on temporary downtime. I mean, obviously you don't want to go down in like normal commuting hours or waking hours, but if there's 5 minutes of downtime at 2 a.m., that's no one's going to notice. But there are things that, like, if they happen, are so costly that, yeah, I get this is going to suck. I get that this is not a simple thing for you to fix, but the downside is so high that we just have to do something. So like when we're like, everything was fixed and it was just kind of a late night call going through everything. It was like, yeah, like everyone was testy for different reasons, but we all came to the same agreement of like, all right, let's figure out what we can do to get this in a spot that makes sense. But it's honestly easier when you've grown a lot. And right now I think we're profitable. We're like close if we're not. And when the product's at a pretty good spot, it's much harder to have these discussions when there are features that, like, you know, you not having is costing you growth. When there's different targets you need to hit to make that next hire, to do whatever else, to get to profitability. And I feel like, yeah, we're at the right spot now where we're able to, it's just becomes a much clearer decision. Because I think those are the calculations that are just hard to make when you're balancing so many different things. But right now, it's just obvious to me. It's like, we've built a great business. We have a great team and we have great customers, and we want to make sure we don't jeopardize that. And when things break, that's when you realize, oh shit, like, there are things we got to worry about. And it's easy to brush it off, but we're definitely at the spot where it's like, we can't do that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, totally agree that there are easier and harder times to make this decision. I think that, you know, we look at, like, from a product perspective, like, what is the time spent on new feature work versus support and DevOps and admin and infrastructure and like documentation and knowledge retention and transfer. And like, there's not a right answer, but those definitely need to be mixed, you know, and it's not just like new features all the time. There's a fair amount of maintenance and just upkeep that goes into all this. And I think that's probably why a bigger team slow down is there's more to risk and more to just keep up with than when you're a single founder or one person and a developer, and you don't have anything to lose, right? The biggest risk then is not making it because you run out of money. If you go down and lose a week's worth of two customers' data, it's not a huge thing.
And a lot of times when things break, the outcome, it might scare you about what could happen, but oftentimes, at least in our experience, like, what happened wasn't that bad. And so it was much easier when we were smaller to just be like, ah, well, like, knock on wood, we got lucky there. That's good. And see if there's anything obvious we can fix right away. But then it's just back to the grind because there's a lot of things we got to do if we want to get to where we want to be. And it's just, yeah, I think you get to some point where you just can't ignore it anymore.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Yeah, just for data point, like status monitoring stuff, there's a million of them. Status Page is the most popular. We use a tool called Status Pal. We did it because it was really cheap. I'm just looking at it now. It's not as cheap as it used to be, but like, it's a public status page that we send folks to. Like, if people are like, hey, you know, we have an issue with this, we can say, hey, yep, go check out our status page. It's also like a really good sales tool because like, if your uptime is really good, like 4.9s or something like that, then like, you can talk enterprise stuff with folks. And then like, it connects to Twitter and you can tweet stuff out with updates on, you know, downtime updates and things like that. And it does Slack and SMS updates to your team. So we do that. It's really helpful just so we don't have to rely on customers letting us know when there's a problem for that level stuff. But the other stuff with like error logs, like, you're spot on that, like, and it goes back to like how much of the development team's attention is to just resolving those pesky bugs that create, you know, trivial and non-important errors so that they can pay attention to the really important ones when they come along. Like, I think there's definitely something to that.
Yeah. And this, I don't want to derail us, but it's like, I remember actually we discussed doing a status page. I brought it up last time. And the more moving pieces there are, the harder it is to set up and the less helpful it is. But also, like, the point that was raised internally is that you need to have an audience that's aware to check the page to make it worth the investment. And so for us, like, that's just not our audience. And we really will just, if it's going to take us, honestly, weeks to a month to get a helpful status page up, we just decide, like, no, we're responsive enough on Twitter and in Slack to check the box for us. That's where we net it out. But I do think if you're in a hosting space, people care about uptime, have that. If you're in a place where, like, it's more tech related and people are familiar with status pages, do that. Yeah, it all just depends. And I don't even know if I should say it, but it's funny. It's like on the StatusPal site, they show, like, the Indie Hackers status page. And, like, why the hell do they have a status page for Indie Hackers?
Right.
It's a great resource, but, like,
yeah,
I don't know, man. Like, no, but I think for what you're doing and probably for a lot of listeners are doing, status page is great, but it's just when you're trying to grow, yeah, you got to balance it with, there are times we're paying down tech debt where we're dealing with these end times. It's the cost of doing business and growth is more important. And there are times where that's not the case. And it's all just figuring out where you're at in the journey. But always fun whenever it happens, of course.
Always being dark and gloomy and pessimistic about stuff. I think it's, you know, it's good to balance the founder optimism to keep it real. Cool. Well, everyone, I hope you found this interesting. Yeah, definitely. You know, if you have experiences with, you know, all this, like paying down tech debt, balancing new feature development versus kind of maintenance and upkeep of development team and knowledge and product and everything, or just kind of disaster recovery stuff in general, shoot us a message, podcast@seekingscale.com, or hit Andy or I up on Twitter, and we'll probably respond to you in about a month because that's how often I'm on Twitter.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Bye.